Hello and welcome. It's episode 56 of Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today I'm delighted to say that we are looking inside the supplement industry before we then dive into a couple of other topics around content creation and prioritizing performance over aesthetics. To do so, we are joined by my good friend, Tom Seed, who is head of sales at Lifestyle Source Supps, the owner of Stealth Nutrition and an online content creator. At the start, you'll hear Tom joke around how much hassle I gave him to try and get him on the podcast, and it was one that's been a long time in the pipeline. So I hope you all get the benefit of that. We really lift the lid on the white label supplement industry, and we understand how brands produce and manufacture their supps and the growth that there has been within this area. I think many of us notice that from different websites we see popping up on Instagram, on Amazon, and all the different sellers that are growing by the day. In our chat, Tom tells us a lot about his career and his experience that enabled him to return and add value to a family business. And I think that's an important aspect of learning from us when it comes to just a career basis that we can apply across the board. Other areas that we talk about within this are around Tom creating content alongside his busy career, something that I resonated an awful lot with from my own experience. And lastly, we explore Tom's bodybuilding prep that he went through in 2019 before winning a UK UP fitness model category. This experience led to him moving away from bodybuilding afterwards and into the realms of CrossFit. We talk at length about how that all came together and the different areas that we can learn from that. I'm pleased to say that today's show is brought to you by Suns. Suns are a men's well-being health brand, and they're focused on an area that, as I've said before, a lot of us haven't spoken a lot about, and that is hair loss. I've been quite open and frank in recent weeks around the uncomfortability that I felt when I noticed myself receding at my temples in my early 20s. It made me feel a little bit less confident, and one of the things I did was I took finasteride to hold on to the hair that I did have around my forehead, meaning that I continue to these days still have a fairly respectable hairline, because I myself, from a vain perspective, didn't want to rock the shaved head look. There'll be many young guys listening like me that will feel the same way. And what you can do is you can go on to suns.co.uk and go through one of the online consultations with a GP to understand what support you can get for your current level of hair loss and any future hair loss that you might have. There's a wide range of medically proven solutions on there, and you can explore those. And whatever package you choose, you can use the code SUNSCAMBRO to get £20 off your first order. I hope you all enjoy this episode. Again, bringing something a little bit different in terms of talking about the supplement industry before we dive into a bit more of a personal catch-up between Tom and I, as it's been a long time in the making. If you are enjoying it, please continue to share it on your Instagram stories, to send it to friends, and help us grow the audience here at Campbell Conversations. I am genuinely excited about this episode, and many of the episodes have been recorded and are set to be recorded in the coming weeks and months. So please stick with me, please help me grow, and let's enjoy this episode. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Campbell Conversations. And today we're taking a look inside the supplement industry, as well as diving into a very familiar topic with many of the listeners in terms of prioritizing performance over purely aesthetics. To do so, we are joined by a good friend of mine, Mr. Tom Seed. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. This is a long time coming. You've been nagging at me to get involved in your podcast for a while, so I thought it's only right. I did after about 8 months of nagging, I was like, right, got to get around to it. One of those things, I've got to get ticked off, and I don't really have an excuse in lockdown. So here I am. You've got me.
That's it, Tom. I was keen to have you on. I'm sure it's a two-way street in terms of you being pleased to be here, but at the same time, yeah, you and I have been connected for a good couple of years now through my protein, muscle food, hustle, all the kind of fitness influencer type deals that we've both done. But you always find people within these that you get on better with than others, and you're one of those people that we both got on in terms of the different events we've been at. And so I was thinking, you're not just your typical cookie cutter guy that posts on Instagram and YouTube, you have a lot of stuff going on alongside that. And I suppose for the listeners' benefit, what does that mean in terms of the head of sales at LifeSource Ups, one of the founders at Helena Health Foods, and of course the actual founder of Stealth Nutrition? So lots of hats that you different wear.
That's it. I'm constantly taking sales hats off, putting marketing ones on, putting YouTube ones back on. So it's pretty busy, but I think it's kind of one of those things. It's my role's just developed, and I like to be busy, so I like doing lots of different things. In terms of the supplement industry, that's something that I've fallen into at the sort of the same time as I got involved in the gym and fitness side of the industry anyway. So it was going from pretty much no idea what I was doing in my life to then just falling into a family-run business manufacturing supplements to then getting stuck into the gym at the same time. So it timed very nicely, and I've not really looked back since.
Yeah, and you mentioned family-run business. So LifeSource Ups, that's something that your dad started back in the day and you started to get involved in once you kind of came of age. What does that look like, and what do they do?
Yeah, so the business itself, we've been contract manufacturing health supplements for 26 years. He started it, well, he actually worked in a factory brewing yeast for beer. He actually ended up taking that on at quite a young age and had no idea why he was doing it, with the margins being so slim. After about a year of running it, he was like, hang on a minute, we're making next to nothing. We're putting in all this hours. We've got a huge production site. He took a massive gamble 25 years ago and bought a tablet press, not knowing that tablets and capsules would become a big thing, and picked up a big client, which is still very big today, within the first year. Then bought a capsule machine and then got in one of his mates to come and help him do the blending, and it's just grown since. So the gym side of it wasn't really something that existed. It was health and well-being. And it was only really kind of when I left school and didn't really know what I was doing, dropped all my sports and replaced the sport with gym, then I was kind of showing a bit of an interest. I was going, you know, I remember my dad walked home and said, we've just got a new fitness client, MyProtein. We were making some of their sachets probably 7 or 8 years ago before they started making it all themselves. And I was like, hang on a minute, this is really cool. My dad's actually making product, or his company is making products for one of the big players in the game, as I was just starting to go to the gym. So as soon as I saw the opportunity to be like, well, I can step in here, work for a business that has an interest with what I'm doing, it was a no-brainer. And I think so many people will do a job that they don't particularly enjoy. And when I saw an opportunity to do something that I had a passion, or my passion was growing for that anyway, it was something I had to go for. So, yeah.
I love that, Tom. And I think just to touch on as well, you worked briefly in sales before that as well, didn't you? So you had a bit of an appetite for
absolutely.
Things and selling things and closing deals.
I remember. So I did mess up my A-levels, not gonna lie. And I had to go back to my parents and show them the results. And all my mates were getting off to university, and I was kind of sat here like, God, I regret watching all these box sets. But anyway, remember, they'd all gone to uni, and I had a 6-month period where I was like, hang on, I can't get a job, no idea what I'm going to do. And it was a girl in my year who I don't think I actually got invited to the party, but it was her 18th birthday. And I think I kind of tagged along in there before they're all going off to uni. I was like, one last party before they all go. And I remember being at the party, went into the garage of this girl's house to get some beer. There was a woman in there. I kind of got locked in the garage. We both get locked in, and then her husband's trying to find her. Obviously, I'm now in this garage at a party with his wife. Looks very suspect here. So then he opens the door. He's like, what are you doing? So I was like, kind of jokingly like, isn't what he looked like? But anyway, got chatting to him further down the line. And he's a great lad. He's a very successful businessman, owns lots of companies. And at the time, I didn't really think anything would progress from it, but we got chatting. I was obviously a bit drunk. He was a bit drunk. We're in this outside. I'm going to chat and a cigarette. And he said, look, next week, come to Rudding Park, which is a hotel in Harrogate. Come for a chat, and we'll see if we get you a role in sales. He was like, how much sales experience have you got? I was like, loads, honestly. Absolutely blagging it, you know, just doing whatever I could, because I think this is my chance, get a job. And I ended up getting a position working, kind of doing sales for lots of different elements of his business. So there was various different websites, all e-commerce. And I just got stuck into it. And for 3 years, I just really sort of took the opportunity by both hands and learned a lot of sales experience, which I then took back to the family business. So it was a nice little move, and I did really well for him. And it was, yeah, just a great opportunity that benefited both of us. So it turned out nicely anyway.
That was you cutting your teeth, though, and also being able to go back to your family business and your dad with some credibility and a skill set, and as well as bringing your knowledge of the fitness sector, which he was wanting to go more into with MyProtein and other kind of gym-based brands.
That's exactly it. At the time, leaving school for me to go to my dad and go, hang on, I've messed up my A-levels, kind of a job. It just felt like the wrong thing to do, and I had nothing to really justify why I was going to get a position or basically walk in and everyone would go, here's the boss's son getting a job, which is what it would have looked like. But I think me taking a good 3 years to actually build some knowledge in a industry, being sales, did quite a lot of marketing as well while I was there. And I think to then go back with some element of sales marketing skills, which I can offer the business along with my interest in the gym. I mean, I would say 40% of the work we do now is the gym industry. Whether when I started there, probably six, seven years ago, it was 95% health supplements, 5% fitness and sport. So I've really managed to, I think it's just the way the industry has gone, because the gym industry has grown rapidly over the last 7 or 8 years. But just kind of with that being my focus when I went there, that's kind of how it's gone. I hope it's been a benefit anyway, because I've really swung the boat around taking it all from health into fitness. But because I've got the interest for it, that's why I kind of pick those clients, pick those customers.
Yeah, I like that. And as I've said, alongside all this, you've been creating your content, you've been doing the Instagram superstar stuff, but there's more to it than that. And I think that's why, again, we get on quite well. Whereas maybe when we go to these events and whatnot, and somebody's maybe just wanting to talk about the best way to take photos, you and I are sitting there like, okay, well, there's a lot more to life than just posting on a social media feed.
Yeah, you see, I think I probably, if I'm going to be honest, I probably started the Instagram, the social media at the age sort of 17, 18, when I first started going to the gym, because I replaced my rugby and my swimming, which was like my passion at school, with working out. And it was kind of hard to justify why I was going to the gym every day. I think at the time I had a girlfriend, and she didn't quite understand that I could be that obsessed with just going to train a muscle group every single day. And it felt almost like I had to justify why I was doing it. So the Instagram almost was like a little gateway into justifying, you know, progress photos, you know, developing certain muscle parts. And that was almost it was probably a bit narcissistic, but I wanted to show people that I was making progress online. And that's why I started the Instagram. Looking at it now, it's completely the opposite. And I think if I can use Instagram to help younger guys with their training or anyone else with just general content and getting involved with brands, it's not really a business monetary side. It's more, I enjoy it because it's become a bit of a hobby. Yeah. The fun is in creating the content. It's not in making money off YouTube revenue ads or whatever people think it is. I do it for a very different reason. I think you're the same. I think the content creating is the fun part. And I don't know, you might do the Instagram or YouTube or podcast or whatever for monetary reasons, but I think it's more a hobby, and I think there's a lot of fun in it.
You've got to love the process. And I think the shoot that stands out that you and I were at was the Hustle shoot, which was great fun down in London back in the summer of 2019, when we were allowed to go places, Tom. And
oh God, can you imagine?
You and I were both having a good time and obviously creating good content for a brand that we believed in, but there was no like real monetary value for us going to that. It was just a case of creating the content, networking with other people. Nadia was there. She was fantastic as well. It was a good group of kind of content creators that were there that day, thankfully, whereas I've been to other ones where you look around and you think, geez, oh, you guys have absolutely nothing to say for yourself. But again, I like that you have a mindset where, yeah, of course, it's great to get more exposure on YouTube and Instagram and reach more people, but it needs to be driven by actually enjoying what you're putting out there. And I think you can see that with what you've put out there over the years and your kind of longevity within it, because it's easy to crash and burn if you are doing it just for one more sponsorship, one more deal. And you've had tons of deals, but it's not been the only carrot for you, so to speak.
No, exactly. I think that, just going back to the Hustle shoot, I think when we were kind of backstage in the room and they were like, look, guys, can you get on? And we're just chatting away and discussing business. And I think we were both in a very similar situation, that we were working full time, still do, and the fitness social media is still not even a side hustle. It's still like an absolute hobby, and we do it because we enjoy it. We do it because we love it, not because it's becoming our job. I don't think I'd ever want it to be a job. I think if I had to make YouTube videos for a living, I would hate making YouTube videos. I think because I do it because it's something to do in my spare time and it's fun and I enjoy putting content out there, and I could put one out a week, I could put one out a year. I think having that freedom makes it a hobby and I enjoy it. So I think we got on really well at that shoot. And I remember when we were doing those one-to-one chats and it was like rapid fire questions. And I remember they came to you and you absolutely nailed every single question. It was like, you gave the most in-depth, well-scripted answer. And then it came to me and I was just like, oh, fuck. And I just no idea what I was saying. So yeah, you're a bit of an expert in front of the microphone under pressure.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the reasons I've taken to the podcasting quite well. But you're a really eloquent guy as well. I guess it's just in work, a lot of my presentations, even before COVID, were over Zoom or over a recorded video to a prospect or a client. Yeah. So it's the same as like, if you took me into the gym now and did some of your CrossFit workouts, if you'd done that 12 months ago, I would have died. If you do that now, I'd probably be more up for it because I've had time to practice it. So the same when Hustle threw the camera on me, I was like, well, I've done this quite a few times. And I knew what I was talking about for the three different questions they asked me. So I was like, bang, bang, bang. And then the same for podcasting. When I started my own show, I've been a guest six times. So I was like, right, okay, I'm kind of used to this format. I can talk about it. It's, you kind of become a bit more of a duck to water. So to steer things towards the supplement industry, Tom, we won't focus on it entirely, but it's obviously an area of significant expertise for you now in terms of being involved in the family business, kind of 6-7 years experience in the space now. What's going on within a manufacturer, and how many of these businesses like MyProtein or bulk powders or whoever else is out there, are they coming to manufacturers like you to produce their subs?
Yeah. So in terms of, we're a manufacturer, we make for, I would say around 50 different companies at the moment.
Okay.
And that varies. We've got a complete mix. We've got a few who are completely international across the whole of Europe. And we've got some who are everything from the smallest startup you can imagine, and then everything in between. And to have a complete mix, we think is quite good, because to have scope and not put all our business into one client just gives us, you know, it doesn't put too much pressure on us to be so accurate or loyal or responsible for that one client. So we have a complete mix, all different sizes. And to answer the question about the number of people who do it, you wouldn't believe the amount of inquiries we get on a daily basis asking, just, you know, I've got a business, or I'm starting a business, or I'm looking to get involved in the supplement industry. And it is relentless. And I'd say it's something that's, you have to eliminate probably 80% of the inquiries you're getting.
Okay.
Because, especially over the last year, we've just kind of stepped through easy to trying to get involved. We don't really want to be involved with a company who don't actually have any idea with what they're doing. And as much as we'll guide someone, and we've got nutritionists, and we've got people who've been in this industry for such a long period of time, a lot of it is we are making it for someone else to then put on the market.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, If you were to go to a manufacturer of a car and say, we've thought about this idea, we want to make a car, but we don't know how to drive, we don't know what we're doing, but we want you to make a car, and then we're going to go out onto the roads and drive it around. When that car crashes, the manufacturer is going to get absolutely nailed.
Yeah.
Right. It's a similar thing. Is we want someone who comes to us and says, I've spent ages putting this formula together. We've got nutritionists on board. We know exactly what we want. They're the exact people we want. And it's a weird industry because we're constantly turning people away, but for the right reasons. And we've had people come to us saying, right, Tom, I want to make a protein powder, which I don't care what protein's in it, in terms of the amount of content, the protein content's relevant. I want it to taste amazing, and I want the cheapest possible price. And I'm going, well, hang on a minute. You could end up with like a 3% protein product. It doesn't justify it, and it's completely corrupt, and you're going to basically do people out of what they're wanting. I don't care, do it. And you have to just turn those people away. And I guess you get that with everything in every industry. You'll get people who will their marketing strategy is going at the lowest possible price to undercut everyone, and they don't care how they do it. And we want people who use branded ingredients, patented ingredients, the top end products, who are really passionate about what they're doing. They know what they want to do. And unfortunately, it's probably, I'd say, 20 to 15% of people who are like that. And the inquiries were just constantly turning away. And it's, yeah, a bit frustrating that it's got to that, but that is what we do find with the white labeling. And if you go onto Amazon and you search pre-workout, you'll probably find there's hundreds of pages of different products, and there's nothing stopping anyone setting up a company, coming to a manufacturer or going to a manufacturer and saying, right, give me a pre-workout. And there'll be manufacturers that will give them an off-the-shelf product, which ultimately then you're just putting out another product against the other 500 that are exactly the same. Yeah. And we try and steer away from the white label, private label, because I always say to them, look, if I give you a product that I've given to another 400 customers, what's your USP? How are you going to sell it? What ultimately all you can do is lower the price lower than that guy. And then it becomes a complete price war, and it just drives the price of the whole industry down. If you make a fantastic product with expensive ingredients and it works and it does the job and it's unique to you and you're passionate about selling it, you'll be able to sell it. And I think that's what I always say to customers is you need a story. You need to have a story behind why you're selling a product, why you're involved in this to begin with. You know, I think the amount of people that don't even know what the products do, and they'll just send me another brand and they'll say, we want this doing. And unfortunately, that's kind of the nature of the industry now. So yeah, we just try and be as selective and careful with who we manufacture for.
That's extremely interesting, kind of lifting the hood into what it looks like. And as you say, it's in fashion to bring out a new pre-workout, bring out a new whey protein, yeah. Or you see bodybuilders in the States, I think, kind of bringing out, oh, this is my mass gaining blend. And like you say, they'll have just gone to manufacturer. They'll say, give us the cheapest possible. If it's 80% protein, that's great. The other 20%, just pump whatever you want into it. It'll make it taste good with all these different sugars and polyphenols, whatever else you can pack into it. And it doesn't really matter what the quality is like. Whereas if they, and then the kind of the second strand is you can buy off the shelf in terms of like pre-made ones that everyone in their brand is producing, or then you need to go further than that. And you go to, you say, Tom, this is our blend that we've come up with our nutritionist. It's higher end. It's a bit more expensive, but we're going to aim for a different niche in the market. Whereas there's all these kind of race to the bottom products that are like, I don't know, trying to compete with my protein for their pricing, but they're producing like half the number of supplements. So of course, they've, in terms of bulk orders, they're never going to ever reach the same capacity. So it's interesting that you get such a wide and different customer base, but equally you need to be selective about the ones that you do try and take.
Correct. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I think it'd be very rare for someone to come to me and say, this is what I want. And they'll know exactly what flavoring, what level sweetener, what ingredients in terms of, you know, do they want a branded creatine? Do they want a, I guess when it comes down to the ingredients, there's lots of questions that will be back and forth. But I think if someone can come with a formula, present a formula, and they'll say, I almost don't have to ask them a question, and I can probably quote them from their initial email, that's when I know they're serious. That's when I know that they've done the research. They're either existing brand who I'm getting manufactured elsewhere and they're basically coming to get a price of us, or they've done the research and they know what they want. And I think they're the customers that you'd look for. In the same way that if you were to go to a clothing manufacturer and you were to say, right, we're currently selling clothing, we've got this like this quality cotton, we want it the same, we want our tags in it, and they'll go into detail with exactly what branding they want. They're the customers you'd probably take on board. You wouldn't take on the guy who says, right, I want to start a clothing company and I want to sell, I'm going to start with white t-shirts and I've not got a logo yet, but let me come back to you with a logo. At that point, you just think absolutely no. And I think with any manufacturing industry, which is very easy to get into, you'll find that that's sort of the trend. And if you go back 10 years, you probably didn't have that, because I think the supplement industry wasn't as saturated and there wasn't that many people doing it. So there was a little bit of fear in a sense of, should I be making this product without knowledge. Whether now there are that many brands out there, it's kind of like, well, I can just float this product onto the market because there are so many. So I think, yes, there's a huge difference in quality. And unfortunately, with it being that saturated, it is probably quite hard to find the better products and the worst products without knowing and looking into them. I think the people who are serious about supplements will study panels. They'll look for logos, look for branding ingredients. And the people who are serious about taking the products will be able to pick out the ones that aren't great. But for your average user who just types in protein into Amazon, you could easily pick up something that's not great without properly looking into it. And I think there will be, I guess there's manufacturers that will make these, you know, products because they're out there. But it's just something that we try and steer clear from.
Yeah. And like you say, you need to have your own USP in terms of we work with high quality brands rather than if you became, we'll try and fight the other manufacturers for the kind of lowest common denominator in terms of price and quality and off the shelf stuff, then you would end up in a dogfight with them to the bottom to see who could do it for the lowest margin. And that doesn't pay your salary, does it, Tom?
Nope, not at all. No, I'm joking. But it is right there. Everyone needs a story. And I think there was one guy who had been to Japan for a year and he came to us and said, pre-COVID, and came in and had a chat with us and said, I want to make a product, but I want my ingredients all sourced from Japan. Because I've done lots of studies on the teas and the raw materials we've got there. And I've been taking the product whilst I was out there. I felt fantastic. I never felt so good in my life. I want to make a product based on that. I want you guys to make it and I'm going to sell it. And that's exactly what I want. And that's the sort of people that you think, well, this guy's got a story. That's what will sell the products. And if you've got nothing to back it, or you've not got any experience in the industry, you'll really struggle to market it. And with there being that many products out there, a lot of it does come down to the marketing, which is a huge part of it.
Yeah, it plays a big, big role. How does this all link into your own actual supplement brand then, Stealth Nutrition?
Yeah, so I started Stealth really because I know the process like the back of my hand. So to actually go from zero to having a full product range, website and everything out there was relatively easy because I've gone through the process with so many of the people. There's one customer that particularly sticks in my mind, which I probably can't go into brand names too much because HR will have my pants down, or GDPR and all that. But this one brand that I remember when I first started and I was kind of just getting involved into learning about the process. The people at my work were kind of taking me through how to do it. And this guy just started it. And I was thinking, God, I can't see how this brand's going to become the brand it is today. And it's a huge brand now. They've probably got over 100 products in their range. And to see the whole process, and I've kind of worked with him throughout his 7 years of growing his brand. And for me, learning how, kind of seeing the development of the brand, seeing the products he's introduced and making them for him to that level, it was a very easy thing for me to go, well, you know, it was almost like I was doing my brand for a little bit of a demonstration for other potential customers. So that if I have to say, you know, if they ask me any questions on what website to use to build a platform, how to get products into Amazon, how to be a seller on Amazon, if it's down to the labeling of a product, the pouches, the finishes, every detail, I was like, well, if I do the entire process, I'll be able to answer any question any trade customer's got. And that was really the purpose of it. But then I thought, hang on, it's a tricky one because I don't want to be promoting clients because then clients will be going, hang on a minute, you know, why are you posting about their product and not our product? And that was too messy. So I didn't want to enter into getting involved with any of the people we make for because it's something that would be quite hard to do knowing that we have 50 plus clients. You know, I thought I'd leave that and not get involved with that. And to have my own was kind of good for, I spent ages looking at other people's products, knowing what works well, seeing which products have done well. So I thought it's perfect to cherry pick exactly what I would have if I could fill a supplement bag and take that to a gym. And if any of my mates or any of my other people online, you know, followers or Instagram followers, if they wanted to try it, great. And I thought it's kind of like one of those things which I've like done as a little bit of a demonstration for potential trade customers and for myself. And I've had loads of good feedback. So it's just worked nicely.
I think it's, again, that credibility piece, Tom. So we spoke about your 3 years experience before you kind of made the return to the family business with a confidence you could add value. This, again, is just an underlining of you going yep. away and doing something and able to then translate that value and experience into your client base and give them that reassurance that, listen, I've been there, I've done it, I've worn the shoes that you're wearing, and I'm able to bring that value to the table.
Definitely. I've just quite a big customer. It's just put out a cherry cola flavored pre-workout, and that came from me messing about with the guys in the flavor house in production, and I said I want to get a cherry cola product for Stealth, and I'd done that, and then as soon as one of my customers said pre-workout flavors hit me, I said try this. We sent the same flavor from the same flavor house that we bought in to go into the Stealth pre. I tried it in his pump pre, and it's sold hundreds of thousands of tubs. So it's one of the things which, yes, it's my experience, and I would never put my brand first, because the bigger picture is the business. It's LiveSource, and that's always going to take priority. It was just quite nice to do something that I know the process. It's good for my other trade customers to see what I can do. And again, it's like you said, it's down to experience, and I can use that to help my other trade customers, which it has done.
We've covered a lot about the supplement industry. I think a lot of people will have learned some new stuff there. Let's dive a little bit more into your content creation and also your fitness journey. So you were a keen swimmer, keen rugby player growing up, but as that kind of came to a close, dived into the gym, and it was bodybuilding, wasn't it? That was kind of the first love.
Yes, I'll say it was the lack of sport, lack of rugby, lack of swimming. When I finished school, I kind of just hit this like void of not really knowing what I was doing in my life, / wanting to stay active, didn't really like running. Probably should have gone to the gym before I did. I was like 18, I think, when I first went to the gym. And that's when I kind of thought, right, get the Instagram, get everything going. Just discovered that my dad was manufacturing for some sport brands. It was all a bit like an exciting journey. And then I didn't look back. I just kind of went all in on the gym, like relentlessly. And because it replaced such a big amount of sport, I was like, this is great. And I don't really need to do anything else. And I continued doing it for probably, maybe 5 or 6 years of just gymming every week. And I didn't even question it. It was never a hard thing to go to the gym, or I didn't have to drag myself. It was just a thing that I did because I wasn't doing sports, so that was just the normal thing, and I really enjoyed it. Seeing the progress is what keeps you going. So it was just the progress I made every year. And a lot of my mates who were at uni were doing the opposite. They were kind of just drinking, doing every drug you can imagine, eating pizzas every weekend, getting fat. And then I was on the other side, and it was kind of like, I was posting on Instagram, but I wasn't kind of like shouting from the rooftops that gym was my life, but I was just, every day grinding away and seeing really good results. So it was the transformation and the progress that kept me going. And then 6 years later, I thought, right, I'm getting bored of this. I need some competitive element in my life. I need to actually get, the rugby was competitive. It was a team sport. The swimming was competitive. I wanted that back in. So I thought, right, I'm going to do a bodybuilding show. And it took me probably a year to convince myself that I was going to do it. Because I was just going, yep, I'll do it. And then I was just finding myself going out and partying on the weekend. And it never really got serious enough. And then I just thought, right, this is it. I'm going to do it once. I'm going to do it once, once only, commit to it. And it was it was meant to be a 16-week prep. I was about 7 weeks, 6 weeks in, and I went to America with my mates. And I came back heavier than when I started prep. Oh, it was like America just became a giant party. So I went to Vegas, and it was pretty relentless in terms of eating and drinking. So I came back from that thinking, I've absolutely fucked up here. I've got no chance. And it was like, right, either you're going to go on the most outrageous, savage 8-week prep of your life, or just forget it and quit. And a few people messaged me saying, mate, you've got no chance. I had no prep coach. I had nothing. And I was just kind of winging it on my own. And I got to about 5 weeks out. And so I'd done like a savage 3-week dieting. And a guy called Tim Stewart stepped in. He followed me on Instagram, and we trained together a bit before. And he said, mate, I've seen your progress you made over the last 3 weeks. You might potentially have a shot here. I'm looking to take on people. This is when you just started coaching. Yeah. And he said, I'm looking to take on people. Do you want me to prep you? I'll help you where I can. I said, mate, that'd be great. Anyway, so I just became this robot for 5 weeks. I just did everything you wanted me to. So I'd drink 5 liters of water a day. I'd eat just like maybe put like 500 calories into a surplus. I had to do this to get to my, basically hit the target of my show day. And then I put on, I think I lost, what was it? I started my 8 week cut at 164 pounds and finished at 139.
Yeah.
So it was a big drop of, and it was a little bit of muscle, but a lot of fat. And my first show came third. And then I thought, right, I'm in good nick here. But Tim was like, if you kept dieting for another 2 weeks, you'd be absolutely bang on. So I did a show 2 weeks after that. And it was a really strong lineup.
Is that the muscle model one you did?
No, so this is another men's physique. And came third in that to a bigger lineup, a better lineup. So I was still happy. And then a week after, it was the UKUP Yorkshire Classic One Championship. And that was it was actually fitness model.
Fitness model, yeah.
But they kind of tied it in with muscle model. And then they split it into weight categories. So it was under 80 kilos, over 80 kilos. And then I won that one. So it was a hell of a rollercoaster ride. Just, I felt horrific. And I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I ticked it off. But I don't think the bodybuilding prep life is for me. I think it was one of those things that it was like, tick it off, get it done, experience it. Because I spent so long in the gym, and it's almost like you've spent 60 of your life training in a gym. What for? Yes, you feel good doing it, but then there then became a purpose. And I was like, right, now I can kind of maybe close the chapter on that a little bit.
Yeah, you wanted to try and see what it looked like to really push it to the extreme. And I certainly know that you did that. I think I remember you saying, I think you were 5 weeks out when we caught up, and you were lean.
Yeah.
But there was still like fat to lose.
Oh, for you. Yeah. And,
but by the time you did your second show in particular, I remember you sending me a photo of me being like, yeah, you're going to do well now. You're going
to. I was like, yeah, I feel like I'm dying, but I'm going for it.
But it's interesting. It's interesting you say that. You went through that process once, you knew what it was like, you experienced it. Obviously, it was great to get the W at the end and the last show that you did in terms of that kind of validation of actually being good at it. But you've since moved away from it. You've since had a bit of a fitness menopause, which is a common theme with a lot of the podcast guests. Talk to us a little bit about that, Tom, and your transition.
Yeah. I mean, you say fitness menopause. I know CrossFit gets a lot of stick about the poor form and us all apparently using tampons or whatever it is. We get a lot of rap about that, but we get a lot of stick, but I would say, I think people often should look at the negative sides of what they're doing rather than the positive sides. Because I think if you take a look at bodybuilding, people will weigh up the negatives and positives. And for most people, or for me in particular, doing the bodybuilding show, at the time I was so focused on the positive, which was winning a show, being less than 5% body fat and ticking it off. If I was to genuinely sit down and write a list of the negative impact that bodybuilding or prep life had to me, there'd have been probably 100 things on the negative side versus a few on the positive. You'll find that some people who have an absolute passion for bodybuilding and doing that they'll have more positives than negatives. But I think if I'd actually looked at the negative impact it was having, that often will make you make your mind up about, it's an accurate measurement. I think the negative, if you take a look at anything in your life and look at the negative aspect, that is quite an accurate measurement on whether you should do it or not.
Yeah.
And I think, the zero sex drive, the foul mood, my performance at work decreased rapidly, social life. For those 8 weeks, none of that existed. And like, I was so moody with everyone. And I was so wrapped up in the one positive of winning a show, when to me, it didn't outweigh it. And I think when I now look at CrossFit and I go, right, look at the balance between, there are hardly any negatives. Maybe, to be honest, I don't know. Maybe you probably won't get the physique you'd get in bodybuilding. I think with CrossFit, you're doing less training focused on developing muscle parts, yep. and it's more of a health and fitness and becoming a fitter, stronger person rather than sculpting your physique to look as good as possible. But then you look at the positives of CrossFit and the community, and I've ranted about this in so many YouTube videos, but the benefits of the CrossFit is not just the movements and going to a gym. It's kind of like the community that it's got. And I think anyone that stepped into that community, given it a go and realized that there's so much more to it, sort of understands and accepts it. I think the people that are very skeptical about it and won't get involved because they're not part of that community, yeah. tend to hate it or hate on it.
Do you know, based on the fact that you'd done bodybuilding for 6-7 years beforehand, means that you've probably built a lot of your muscle? And I've found when I've done some more functional fitness style stuff in the last year or so, my physique hasn't changed radically just because I've already built the muscle, and it's a lot easier to maintain what you've got than it is to build it. Unless I was in a severe deficit, then it starts to obviously come off, as it did for your show prep, a little bit of muscle. Yeah. But yeah. you've built that base layer. Appreciate you maybe not doing as many lateral raises or tricep pushdowns or yeah. skull crushers, but overall, your chest, your legs, your back are probably going to be still quite thick and developed from the years of training. And there's going to be an element of maintenance within the CrossFit programming while still becoming more functional. And I guess one of my first questions for you, Tom, around CrossFit was, how did you manage this transition? Did you just go from training push-pull legs 6 days a week into training at a CrossFit box 5-6 days a week? What did it look like?
To be honest, I still haven't dropped the bodybuilding. I'm still not 100% CrossFit in terms of that's not all I do. And you'll find that even the top level CrossFit athletes will still spend days where they'll just do focus on compound movements. They might do heavy squats, heavy bench press, and that's still part of their CrossFit training. So it will never fully just flip over and become CrossFit and stop being bodybuilding. There's still so many elements of both that still are part of each other. So initially, I went to a CrossFit workout and hated it because I was really bad. And my ego from the bodybuilding was like, oh, I don't like this. I've gone into a sport which I absolutely suck at and I didn't like it. So I was like, maybe not for me. And then I revisited it a few more times and it probably took me 6 months of doing maybe one CrossFit class every week to actually go, okay, I've got to drop my ego, forget the ego, go into it accepting that all these movements that I'm about to do, I'm going to be crap at. And yes, I've got muscle. Yes, I've got some foundation. There are so many elements of it which are technique, and I've got to go in there and focus on being terrible at CrossFit and say to the coach, I'm absolute crap. To, you know, talk me through it. And as soon as I dropped that ego to begin with, I found that I was able to make progress really quickly. It was when I was resilient to going from being a gym goer who has 6 years of experience training and won a bodybuilding show to then step into a CrossFit box where people who'd been doing that for 3 or 4 years, who immediately judging them from how I thought they'd be,
yeah,
way outperformed me, you know, in terms of technique. And as soon as I dropped that ego, it became a lot easier. So I'd say advice to anyone who is looking to do CrossFit: you can't go into it thinking it's going to be a breeze. And yes, there are movements, some are complex, some are easy. A lot of it's technique. You've got to be prepared to kind of go in as a beginner, like you would with any sport. And I think that was something that I wasn't prepared for, because I kind of thought CrossFit, it's a bit of functional training, it's a bit of running, it's a bit, well, if it involves any weights, I'll be fine with them. And I went into it with that attitude. And as soon as I've kind of dropped that and gone, right, I'm going to have to learn this from the start, back upwards, it probably took me about a year to get good at some movements, especially like double unders, but things like that. But I'd say, yeah, that's the advice, is drop the ego and be prepared to be bad when you start.
Yeah, the death of the ego, that resonates so hard with me, because the garage gym that I've got access to at the moment during this lockdown period, it's mostly functional stuff that we're doing, in terms of we'll do a strength piece at the start and then we'll do a Metcon or an EMOM or something like that. And honestly, you think because there's weights involved, like you say, that you'll be good at it. But when there's then burpees or devil press or clean and press snatches, there's so much technique to it that it tires you out doing that. And equally, you're doing it under fatigue, in terms of maybe you've done 15 calories on an assault bike, 15 calorie ski, and then you're doing these movements. It's a totally different modality. Yeah. And I love the fact that you're telling people, like I was, going into any gym in bodybuilding, I'd be like, yeah, I'll throw down with you. I'll be able to train what you're doing and push myself in terms of my body weight versus yours. But going into a CrossFit space and going into some of those sessions, you're going to get embarrassed by somebody who doesn't look like they could embarrass you, but they will, yeah, in terms of their performance.
That's exactly, yeah. And I think with CrossFit, every workout scaled. So there'll be people who will scale a workout, and you might find that they're doing a much easier alternative of the exercise to you are, but you're both neck and neck by the end of the workout, and it gets really competitive with someone who is perhaps way better or way worse than you, just doing a slightly scaled version. So you might find that all the classes are quite similar, and having that option just prevents people from kind of being, I think when you go into a commercial gym and you see the biggest guy in there doing bicep curls next to you, it's very off-putting, and there's no scaling option, and you people are often thrown off by that. And with CrossFit, you don't get that. So everything's quite accepted in terms of, if you're bad, here's a scaled option. If you're great, here's an RX option. And everyone accepts everyone for getting involved and basically getting stuck into a workout, because no workout in CrossFit is easy, especially, yeah, the open and CrossFit game stuff. But
you mentioned double unders. Was that one of the main things to work on? What were the other things that you kind of technically were like, God, I need to spend some time on this?
The main one would be the kip initially, because the kip applies to lots of different movements. So you've got the kip, which goes into toes to bar, into kipping pull-ups, and then butterfly pull-ups. And that is one thing you want to learn straight away, because if you're in a workout against people and you're doing strict pull-ups, and there's maybe 40, 50 pull-ups in a workout, you're absolutely cooked. If you've done 30 strict pull-ups against some guy who's just done butterfly ones, he's nice and sort of, you know, just warmed up for the workout. Whether you've done 40 strict pull-ups, your back and shoulders and arms and legs, everything's just gone. So I think that was the main one. Kipping was the first movement, and that's obviously the pull-up that gets loads of stick online for being a fake pull-up because it doesn't do anything. But that movement, double unders, what else? Muscle-ups, still nowhere near there. I'm still struggling with the muscle-up. So it's one of those things that you'll just pick up more movements the more you do it. And again, I'm enjoying the journey of going back to being crap at movements. If you went in and you were just the best at everything and you could do it all, it wouldn't be fun. And as much as everyone likes to think that they want to be the best bodybuilder in the world, actually the fun is in the journey of being bad, seeing progress. And for me, it's getting better at movements is way more fun than just going in and beating everyone, because I think that the enjoyment is the learning, the going from being an absolute novice to slightly improving and competing against other people on your level. So I've still got loads to work on.
Hitting that reset button and being a beginner again must be so exciting at our age, because
exactly,
like you say, you were an expert. I was just saying there, like, you and I could have gone into pretty much any bodybuilding gym. You'd go into like Ultraflex, whatever it is, which is a kind of big, intimidating bodybuilding gym, and you'd be cool, like in a vest, looking good, doing a push session, confident what you're doing. But then if they put you in a CrossFit box and asked you to do whatever the CrossFit Games workout was, you'd be a total novice, and that's so exciting. And I think the ability for CrossFit to continue to scale and change is maybe the most exciting element of it. Don't get me wrong, I've never gone full CrossFit, and it's unlikely that I will, but the elements of the functional fitness of it really excite me, and building that into my week's training now is something that I couldn't imagine not doing, which is incredible. If you spoke to me 18 months ago.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. After lockdown, I'm going to drag you over to my CrossFit box, which is in, it's Blackwall Fitness. If you look it up, it's an absolutely top box. And I've already joked about getting some of the bodybuilding guys that I used to train with. I'm like, as soon as lockdown's over, you're coming with me, and we're going to make an absolutely hilarious YouTube video where I'm going to put you in your place. Because I train with them, and they're getting bigger, they're getting leaner, and I'm like, okay, right, you're getting your glory in this gym when I'm training with you. But as soon as CrossFit boxes are open, you're going back there. So yeah, I'll definitely have to get you down from Scotland, and we'll do a CrossFit workout. It'll be fun.
Agreed. How have you managed to train functionally during this period then? Have you been doing more running? What's it looked like?
In lockdown?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm in a flat at the moment, which isn't ideal. I've got a very elderly woman living in the flat below me, which you can imagine slamming a dumbbell on the ground is not great. So the flat training's limited. I've got a couple living above, and I'm pretty sure that they're doing workouts, but I'm not sure what it is, but it's a lot of repetitive banging. So if she's watching this, hopefully that's a little hint to calm down a bit. It's hard in the flat, very hard, especially with the weather. Summer lockdown was fine. I built a pull-up bar, which I practiced my kipping pull-ups on, out of scaffolding. And that's how I actually nailed the kipping pull-up, was basically lockdown. It was just relentlessly doing it until I got the technique. Summer was fine. I think this lockdown's been pretty tough. And I'm just focusing on work where I can. So, yes, I'm not training every single day. My mate's got a garage gym, which I'm sneaking up to on a weekend just to get some workouts in. But, yeah, it's very limited. But as soon as I've got the new house, which I'm moving into, the priority was a garage, because I'm like, this can't happen again. This can't happen again. Garage gym's going in. And, yeah, I know people have said to my mate, like, you're so lucky to have a gym. And he's like, well, hang on. He saved up and he bought a gym. Yeah. There's nothing lucky about it. I think the people that have been sensible and managed to get hold of gym stuff, and if they want to train, they'll train. So it's not great, but yeah, as soon as I get the new house, we'll be sorted. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I've been lucky with access to a garage gym in terms of one of my friends got one during the first lockdown. I used it intermittently during the first lockdown and kind of trained in my living room until it was kind of calm enough for me to go up there and clean it down, open it up, close it over once I've gone. And then at the moment we're almost in a bubble in terms of training together, and it's been great because he's done a lot more CrossFit in the past, and so he programs a lot of the stuff that we do. And two or three of the previous podcast guests, so Sarah Allen is actually a high level CrossFit competitor, and then her partner Chris Mott has been on as well, he's a CrossFit coach, and they've been great for bouncing ideas off in terms of like testing me a little bit more. And I'm still so attached to some of my bodybuilding stuff in terms of like at the start of the workout, but then they just empty me with like some of the metcons that they program afterwards. So it's been exciting in that respect.
Funny. In terms of training, that is actually a great way to do it, is we call it CrossFit box, we call it body armor, which is like bodybuilding, and it's basically like you're focusing on workouts for quality, so you're doing really good quality reps to build strength, and then you kind of empty the tank in terms of a Metcon, an AMRAP, something that's just cardio based and savage, just to get some calories burnt and get moving. That's kind of the way that most CrossFit training goes, is you do some body armor or body building exercises and then move into a cardio based functional workout. So I think if you're training like that, it's pretty much bang on.
It's been good fun. The other thing I was going to say to you about kind of cardio and stuff is your prep last year, you were on a treadmill incline walking. My prep for my photo shoot, where I got pretty much inside out, I was doing 15 to 17,000 steps a day. And it was great because it meant I wasn't taxed from my cardio for my training, even though I know you dug a lot harder and you end up on like 1600, 1700 cals or whatever it was digging.
I think the last few weeks I was on about 1700 calories, but that was purely because it was my fault. I left it too late and I had 8 weeks, which is not advised, not recommended.
But I certainly found that I was able to recover to still go in and train. It was only the last couple of weeks where I was so lean that I was getting pain in my knees when I was leg pressing, but steps meant that I wasn't taxed. Whereas I reckon if I was to get as lean now with the CrossFit sessions, I think I'd be more fucked and more tired and harder to recover for my kind of more bodybuilding style stuff in terms of performance.
Absolutely. I think that's right. I think to be burning calories to get your steps in, to be putting yourself into a deficit using cardio, can only be done in a list state, because if you go and absolutely cane it, your body's going to be absolutely knackered. You're going to want to replenish, your energy stores with lots of food. So I think to kind of rely on CrossFit training to get you really lean would be probably quite dangerous. But I think once you kind of accept that I train to be better, I want to improve my fitness and improve my performance at the CrossFit box, as soon as that's my mindset, I don't actually mind if I'm 8, 10, 12% body fat, so long as I'm performing better in the box. That's more important. Obviously, don't get me wrong, if I've got a pool summer holiday with loads of pool parties coming up, I might dial it in 2 weeks before and do a bit more lifts and less CrossFit. But I think on the whole, I think if you go into the CrossFit side, the performance is where you're focused at. So you'll probably eat more, you'll probably do more HIIT training and less cardio. But I think, yeah, to try and get sort of photo shoot ready by doing HIIT or CrossFit training would be pretty hard.
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think in terms of preserving maximum muscle tissue by training in progressive overload with your hypertrophy stuff, doing that alongside your CrossFit, really tough. But I think year round, you're probably able to maintain a pretty lean physique because your output is crazy, Tom. I don't know about you, but my calories have been high for a long time, but they're sky high right now just to hold on to what I'm on, because the output's mad. Sometimes we do a kind of EMOM at the end of a session, and I think you're doing like 100 to 200 calories on the bike and the ski, and then obviously all your other movements on top of that.
Part of the workout, yes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You could be doing a 500 calorie workout at the end of the session, which
is absolutely crazy.
Well, I think when it comes down to physique, I think as soon as Matt Fraser retired from CrossFit, which was last week, the first thing that I saw in an interview, someone said to him, "What's your plan? What are you going to do now you've retired?" And he said, "I'm going to get in really good shape." And everyone was like, "Hang on a minute, you are?" And he said, "No, because I've been eating and I've been putting food into my body that makes me perform better. I eat bread, I eat pasta, I don't eat lean mince, eggs, chicken, rice. I eat a diet that's based on me performing better." He said, "As soon as I start eating higher protein, lower calorie, you know, calorie dense foods that benefit his physique," he said, "I'm going to now get in some serious shape." And I think that sums it up. I think you can't be a CrossFitter and have the best physique in the world.
Yeah,
I think to do both is going to be impossible. I think just your physique is a byproduct of your training hard. So I think, yeah, if your goal is to look incredible, then I'd probably say stick to your bro splits and your bodybuilding, because that's going to be the best way. But I think a lot of it comes down to why do you train and finding the right, you know, your values for training. As soon as I discovered that I could go into a workout and be competitive every single workout, I dieted for 8 weeks for one competition.
Yeah.
I go to CrossFit and I have a competition every single workout. I'm like, I'm getting that competitive element in my life every time I train. So even that was like, this is where my value. This is giving me a reason to go, and I want to beat that guy every single workout. And that competitive element comes out straight away. So that was one thing straight away. You've got the community, you've got lots of different movements. My fitness has improved so much.
And you still look good as well, which I think is such an important caveat. Like we say, if you want to look like the top 1% of fitness models, your bodybuilding style training is always going to win. But if you want to look pretty good year round and be able to move well, get the competitive element in the community, there is another option out there, and that's one that you've really taken up, Tom. I think the last kind of couple areas to cover with you really is, what are the long-term goals in both fitness for yourself and as well as business with LifeSource and Stealth?
Yeah, so for me, in terms of business goals, it's going to be focused on LifeSource, keeping the company growing. It's obviously a primary business. I want to keep it. I mean, this year we've seen huge growth, obviously, immune support products and anything COVID related, any sort of product that helped with that has just gone absolutely crazy. So this year we've seen big growth, which probably not many companies have in a pandemic, but you know, the nature of the industry we're in, we've done well. But I think if I can continue the growth of the company, that is the primary goal in terms of business. I think my YouTube, my Instagram, that's purely a hobby. So I don't monetize my YouTube videos. I've got no interest in that becoming a job. Like I said earlier, I don't want that to be a job, and I don't want the pressure of having to do YouTube or having to do Instagram. So business-wise, I just want to grow the supplement business and keep that going. I think the rate is going. That's probably the only primary goal. Stealth as well. That's early days, off to a good start. So I think to grow both together would be great. But in terms of like YouTube and Instagram, there's no more that I want to really focus on in terms of business. In terms of fitness, if you'd asked me this 2 years ago, it'd have been, I want to do well in a sport or go into some sort of like possible career in bodybuilding or fitness modeling. I think now it's, I just want to stay active, stay fit, stay injury free. And I think that's probably age where I've kind of thought, hang on a minute, I enjoy working out, I enjoy being healthy. That's probably my limit on fitness. I think the dreams of like becoming the biggest fitness model or the dreams of being an athlete at the CrossFit Games aren't even in my scope. I think people often get told, like, you know, you can do anything you want to do, and you can be the best at anything if you put your mind to it. I think it's such a bad message to put out there, because if you set yourself up to have the goal of being the best at your sport or the best in your field, ultimately, if you're not, then you're going to be upset, or you're going to be chasing something that you're never going to get to. So I think the fitness side, I think it's just a case of stay active, enjoy working out in a box, and it's probably not going to get much further than that.
That's healthy though.
I think that's right. I wouldn't want to set myself a ridiculous goal in terms of fitness when all I enjoy now is just going to a CrossFit box a few times a week and training. But it's very weird how my fitness journey started off with such high hopes and ambitions. But I've realized over time that if that's all I'm aiming towards, I'm probably never going to get there. So why chase that?
It now plays a role as a support system alongside your business and your career. So I think that's a healthy balance that you've got. And as you've said, during this particular lockdown, you've been very focused on just driving the business forward, and the fitness has kind of sat alongside that as an outlet for your mental health and your well-being in terms of like getting out and moving and being fit. But it's not been the be-all and the end-all in terms of what it might have been in the past.
Definitely. I mean, we're both similar in the sense that we have fitness involved in our life as a hobby, even though on social media it might appear that it's a huge part of it. And people always, you know, I've not seen people in ages, and they'll say, "Oh, Tom, you know, how, you know, you're doing your fitness modeling and your gym, and what else are you doing?" And they've got no idea that I'm actually, that's just a little bit of a hobby. But ultimately, Instagram displays that quite heavily, in the same way that to you might get the same. Yeah. I think the fitness is still going to be a hobby. What about yourself? I'm interested in where you're going with your fitness.
Yeah, with my fitness, I absolutely just want to be...
You're going to come out with, "I'm going to be a CrossFit Games athlete."
No, mate, no. I want to look like I'd be a CrossFit Games athlete. I absolutely want to push my functional fitness as far as possible. So I want to get stronger. I didn't do a lot of the kind of squat, bench, deadlift for a very long time because it wasn't the best movement for me to get hypertrophy in terms of adding size. So now I'm working more on strength and also working on my capacity in terms of my aerobic fitness. I've been sent a few different tests that I can do throughout the year. So things like deadlifting 2.5 times body weight for a couple of reps, squatting 2 times body weight for a couple of reps, benching 1.5-2 times body weight for reps. I'm gonna start to formulate those goals, as well as kind of maybe an EMOM or an AMRAP for time within like a kind of CrossFit setting, but not pure CrossFit in the purest sense of it as you become. So that's gonna be areas that I'm definitely gonna delve into. But it's fitness definitely just sits as an kind of side thing for me in terms of my pure enjoyment of it alongside business and work and then content creation.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think is healthy.
I think we're probably quite similar in that sense, that it would appear that is a huge factor of our lives, when actually ultimately that's kind of what's displayed on social media because we've got an interest in it. I think when I started it probably was ultimately where I wanted to go with it. But I think over time, you just get a little bit older and realize that Instagram's now become a mass marketing platform, and technology's screwing up absolutely everything. I think in a sense that people's expectations on looking like either the best fitness model in the world or performing like the best CrossFit athlete, that's where expectations are going now. And I think that's just getting really toxic. So I think with Instagram, if I can help people and sort of help people in a fitness sense, that's where it will go. But for me, it's just going to be, staying active, staying healthy. And that's probably it.
Sounds good, Tom. Last thing to ask you then, where's the best place for people to connect with you? It will all be in the show notes below as well, of course.
Ooh, many platforms. YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Depends who it is, to be honest. In terms of my socials, I guess we can put them in the podcast. And if it's a business inquiry, probably LinkedIn. If it's anything fitness or CrossFit related, probably YouTube, Instagram, or my Twitter. And then, yeah, in terms of my brand, you can check out Stealth. I'm not going to make this whole podcast about promoting my brand, so I'm not even going to mention that, but you can put it in the links below.
It'll be linked in the show notes below. Thank you so much for listening. As always, guys, please take a screenshot, bang it on your Instagram story, tag myself, tag Tom. We cannot wait to hear your feedback. I hope you all enjoyed this one, and I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.